don't know where to start. This trip was a different trip. This was my fifth trip in the last 5 years. To Israel. I've been so blessed. Every trip has been unique. Every trip has been wonderful. This trip was a totally different trip. We knew that it would be a different trip because our purpose was a little bit different. Of course, our purpose was to go back to home, claim the land, claim our inheritance like we always do, but we went with the purpose of pioneering, and we got the opportunity to pioneer. And I know Jolie's already shared some things, so I don't want to repeat hers, but just in case any of you don't know, we went with no transportation, no agenda, nobody to take us anywhere. We had to pray and seek the Father as to where we needed to go and then find out how to get there, which meant walking to the bus station, finding out what bus, getting on the bus, getting to where you were going, either walking the rest of the way, taking taxis, cheroots, you know, all these different things. And I do have a list of do's and don'ts that we learned. We learned a lot of those, and, you know, we'll be passing those on for those of you who want to go and take. When it's, this is good because you don't have to wait on a group to go. Now we can see the vision that Jan and Craig have had for so long of people just going, and hopefully we can keep people in there more often than we have been because you don't have to wait on a group. You can go, and it can be done. It can be done. We took a lot of unscheduled tours, but even that was in the Father's plan. I made some notes because there are things I do not want to leave out because there's some things he wants to say, I think. The biggest message that he spoke to me and that I brought back, and I hope I will never, ever forget it, is get rid of the baggage and lighten the load. And we learned that very quickly. We got there on Monday. What? Repeat that. Get rid of the baggage and lighten the load. I'm going to repeat that a number of times in here. Because here, the Wednesday after we got there Monday, we set out for Jerusalem, our first big trip. We took a bus, and we were told we could just walk from the bus station to Jerusalem. And I know Jolie shared this in her letter, so I won't go into all that. I'm going to show what the Father showed me in that. We were going to stay at Christ Church Guest House, so we were spending the night. So we had backpacks on our back. And in choosing what to put in that backpack and thinking we're just going to have a short walk from the bus station to where we can get rid of our luggage, I'm thinking of everything I'm going to need. So in the backpack went the blow dryer and the straight iron. And we'd stayed in a motel in Jerusalem one time, a really nice one, and didn't have any toiletries, which is unusual. So God forbid if we were to get there and it not have shampoo and conditioner and all this stuff. So in went my shampoo and my conditioner and my lotion. And we were going to Hezekiah's Tunnel, a tour the next day. So we had to have water shoes and, you know, all the stuff. And then, of course, I couldn't leave my Bible out because there might not be one in the room because this is Judah. So in went my Bible. That backpack weighed a lot. When I was done, I could barely zip it. And so then when we got off that bus, and it took us 90 minutes to get to where we were staying, you know, walking with these backpacks on our back. Didn't take me far down the road before I began repenting, because I knew. I mean, the Father just spoke to me how light my load could have been. Number one, I could have wrapped my head in a head wrap, scarf, simple scarf that doesn't weigh a thing. I didn't have to worry about how my hair looked the next day. I could have wrapped my head. That would have eliminated the blow dryer and the straight iron, the shampoo and the conditioner. All of that would have been gone. I could have prepared better. He talked about preparedness. When I made the reservations, I could have said, do you have toiletries? Do you have a Bible in the room? Because there were toiletries and there was a Bible in the room. All that backpack needed to have was my change of clothes for the next day and my water shoes. I mean, nothing. That 90-minute walk would have been so much easier. And this was in the heat of the day. So I repented. I did. I knew he was speaking that to me. I knew that I'd done that because not just from the things I just said, but he showed me, before we got to that guest house, all the baggage that I was carrying in my life that he wasn't asking me to carry, that I couldn't carry. I couldn't do anything about these situations. But I wasn't trusting him because I was carrying the baggage, and it was weighing me down tremendously. And so I knew that was the spiritual lesson in this, and by the time I got there, I had truly, truly repented. So, and it lightened the load. That's what I kept hearing. The verse that he gave me was, Therefore, Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, let us also, seeing we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. How much better and how much more effective can we run and can we do what he's called us to do without this every weight, which is sin, because it's a lack of trust when we're carrying these weights. I wanted to point out about our walk to Megiddo, and I think, did you share about that, Jolie? You probably did, but there's some couple things in there. You know, we set out for this walk to we took the bus to Megiddo, and this was one place I had never been, and I was excited about going there. And so we knew that we would have a mile and a half walk once we got off the bus station to the actual site of Megiddo and then the walk up. By this time, we'd walked so much, we thought, piece of cake, and there was not much we'd learned. All you really needed was a bottle of water, your shekels, and your passport. So that load was pretty light. So we got off at the bus station, didn't realize that it was a freeway that was that mile and a half, so there was nowhere to walk at all. We even tried to scrunch up on it by the guardrail, and everybody's blowing and blowing the horn, so it's like, okay, we don't do that, because there's a ditch here. Not just a little ditch, there's a nice ditch that's full of rocks and stones and brambles and thistles and a dead animal, and it truly was. And so that was the mile and a half walk that we took to get to the base of it. About the time we got to the base of it, I said to Jolie, because the Father brought something back to my mind, because we're thinking we should have taken a cab the whole way up here. If we'd had any idea, this was the kind of walk, this was the heat of the day, too. It always seemed to be the heat, which was the heat of the day most of the day, no matter what time it was. But I remembered years ago, Joe, I think y'all were there, it was the time that Bill fell and Ariel broke his foot on Gomla. We were on Gomla, and Ariel did a teaching about how important it was for Ephraim to walk the land when he's there. That in every step that we take, we are claiming our inheritance, that we are to repent for the sin of Ephraim, identificational repentance, as well as our own personal repentance of the idolatry, of the rebellion, of the stiff-neckedness of Ephraim, to pray for the blinders to come off of Judah and for the reunification of the house of Israel. So I looked at Jolie and I said, you know what? I think we're supposed to walk this. I began to realize there was more to this trip than proving that you can walk and take buses and all of this. We were destined to walk this land. And so the first few walks were, you know, you were so head up on, am I going to get to the right bus and am I going to get the truth? But at this point, it was lay all that down and it became a prayer walk from that point forward. And everywhere we went, that's what I was doing. I was prayer walking and doing those things that I remember that Ariel had said do. So Megiddo in itself was phenomenal. I learned things I never, ever knew. It was built by King Solomon. King David was there before it built to that site. Josiah was there. But what really just gave me chills was this huge altar, round altar. And we were lucky enough to get right behind. There was this Jewish guy who was taking a tour group, and he really knew his stuff. So we kind of edged up and were listening in to some of the things he was saying. And he was saying that this altar was the largest altar that still remains standing. There's seven steps that are still there at the back of this altar. And when they first uncovered it, there were numerous bones found at the base of this altar. This altar was there during Elijah's time. And I'm just looking at that altar and just getting chills. I mean, that was just astounding to me. So I was just so glad that we did that. We, everywhere we went, of course, were soldiers, but when we got on the buses, every time we got on the bus was at least half soldiers. There was a time that Noelle and I actually couldn't get on the bus because the entire bus filled with soldiers, and we had to wait on the next bus. So there were all these soldiers everywhere, and from the first bus trip, when I got on that bus with those soldiers, and I always seemed to be sitting next to one, but they were exhausted, and they were just, I mean, the minute that bus rolled, they were dead. They were just sound asleep. But I began to pray. He showed me, pray for these soldiers every time you're on this bus. I began to pray for their protection. I began to pray for no loss of life. I began to pray that their eyes would be open to Yeshua. So that became the bus rides. And at that point, I want to say, before we left, I knew we were in for an exciting time. Carolyn Hyde, for those of you who remember, and she actually sang this first song that we did today in congregational that we didn't dance to, that we played the tambourines. That's Carolyn Hyde. She's been here before. She's a Messianic Jew and has a wonderful ministry there in Israel. And when she was here, she'd said, if you're ever in the land, call us. And she was telling everybody an invitation, come to our home and have a meal. And I just love her so much and felt such a bond with her when she was here that I kept, had been thinking weeks prior to going was, gosh, I wish we could go see Carolyn Hyde. And finally, the Sunday before we left, I thought, what is wrong with me? Why do I not just email her and say, we're going to be in the land, can we come to see you? Well, they don't recognize the house of Ephraim. They know that we do, and they, you know, we all set those differences aside when they came. They do not recognize us as Ephraim at all. That's a very strong thing that they have. So I emailed her and said, we're going to be in the land. You know, could we come? And she emailed right back and said, oh, we're in the States. We came over, and we're going to be there to the end of August. However, I have a favor to ask. And if you can't do it, it's okay. Her son, Avi, is a soldier in the IDF. And those of you who get her newsletters know that they have asked prayer over the last several months. This young man, being a believer in Yeshua, has undergone much persecution in his unit in the IDF. I mean, terrible things, beatings and taking away his Bible and just all kinds of stuff. And so I've been praying for him. So she shares that Avi has this flute that is very special to him, brings great comfort to him, and it had needed repair. And they'd sent it to the States some time ago to get it repaired, and it was ready. He is only home on Shabbats. He's out in the field. They're all gone. There's nobody there for them to deliver this flute to. For them, and somebody's got to be there to sign for this flute. Somebody had to be there at my house. And she said, could we send this flute to you? Now, we were leaving. I got her answer back on Monday, and we were leaving on that next Sunday. And you take that to him. Oh, my goodness, I was so honored. I emailed her back and I said, this would be the greatest honor. We have been praying for him. And to get to meet him, this would just be wonderful. And I got so excited. I thought, Ephraim is carrying this boy's flute home to him, whether he knows it or not. And I know the father is in this. So then it went through a string of emails through that week from the flute company. The guy was out of town, did not look like the flute was. She even emailed and said, they're not going to be able to get it shipped to you in time. The guy that would ship it is out of state, and I guess, you know, someone else will have to do it, but thank you for being so willing. I was not going to let that blessing be snatched out of my hand that quickly, so I emailed her back, and I said, you know, I think I'm supposed to bring this flute, so I'm going to believe and pray that we're going to get this flute. The next day I'm at work, and this weird number calls me, and I pick it up, and it's this guy from the flute company, and he is overnighting. He said, I got the email. I'm out of state. I'm going to get back. I'm going to get that flute to you before you go. Flute came, so packed the flute in the suitcase, and I'm so excited about that. Well, as it turned out, we get emails when we get there that it doesn't look like we're going to be able to connect with him. And so I'm just to leave it with Ariel and tell you, because this other couple that lives in his neighborhood would come and pick it up. They were coming through Afula on that Thursday. They would pick it up and take it to him. So I emailed back and said, great, that's fine. I'm just glad he's going to get the flute. So gave it to Ariel and tell you. Come to find out that couple's car engine died and their son was put in the hospital. Now, I know that didn't happen just so, you know, because the flute, but, you know, they weren't able to come. Well, I did not even know that Talia ended up making contact with him. She actually met him as he was going back to his unit on the side of the road on a freeway. They designated a time. She was going in that direction. He was standing there. She drove by, rolled the window down, handed him the flute, and drove off. So when I found that out, I was just still so disappointed. So Carolyn emailed me and said, Avi got the flute. Thank you so much. And I'd emailed and said, you know, so disappointed I didn't get to meet him, but that's okay. 2 days later, he called me. The strange number picked up, I picked up, and it was him. And he could not thank me enough for bringing that flute. And I was able to share with him how thrilled I was to bring that flute and how we had been praying for him and how the Father had put on my heart about all these soldiers on the buses, about how he put on my heart to pray for their protection. Told him what I was praying and all he could say, he just kept saying, oh, wow, thank you so much. Oh, wow, thank you. You could hear the emotion in his voice. So we had this awesome conversation. So I don't know what the Father's doing with that, but I know Ephraim was supposed to carry that boy of Judah, that soldier, his flute. So very, very thankful for that. And if y'all saw the email, well, I didn't see it till I got home because our computer crashed, but then I saw when we got home, they've moved him to another unit because actually he was getting death threats in that unit. So they've had to move him to a new unit. So do be praying for him and that in this unit, the light of Yeshua will shine and that he'll have favor. Mount Tabor was a place that we kept trying to get to, and it just didn't work out. And so Noelle and I decided to set out on that Sunday, and I'm not going to go through that because y'all got that email about what happened with that and how we ended up having to walk up that mountain. And I've been to Mount Tabor many times before, so was not planning to walk up that mountain. But even in that, and that was the craziest scenario. And so when we got put off in the middle of no taxis, and Noelle and I are looking at that mountain and realizing there ain't no taxis to be seen and there's nobody else around, and we either have to walk back down here or just walk this mountain, and we said we're going to walk the mountain. As I started up that mountain, the greatest joy filled my heart, and I knew again, and I don't understand it, why that all of that happened. We were supposed to walk that mountain. We were never supposed to take a taxi up that mountain. I would have never, ever chosen to do it. But as we walked, I finally told Noelle, because I thought she is going to think I'm crazy, because she was not a happy camper about walking up that mountain. About 10 minutes into it, I said, Noelle, I am so excited. We are supposed to be walking up that mountain. Those Arabs might have meant it for harm, but the Father meant it for good, because we're supposed to walk every step up this mountain. And the greatest excitement came in when we would stop on these lookouts over the Jezreel Valley, and you know the significance of that. And I just pray and pray over that valley and pray, and just thinking on Deborah and Barak and Sisera and that, and thinking of Yeshua and his Talmudim, if indeed that was the Mountain of the Transfiguration, as people say that it is. It was an awesome time. And by the time we got to the top, the people who had passed us were going, did y'all not know how far it was? We saw you walking. Yes, we knew how far it was. We didn't plan, but this was what we're supposed to do. So again, that was absolutely meant of the Father. And then I think I put in there about the singing in the spirit that he led me to do at the bus stop coming back down. Then the deal with the UN, I have not figured that out yet, but there was some significance in that, I think, for the UN to stop and ask us where Mount Tabor was. You know, these uniformed men, and I'm looking at it, and so I'm giving directions to the UN. Ask me some more advice. So I don't know what happened there, but then we didn't think we were going to get to make it to Mount Gilboa, because taxis, we were going to take a taxi, just Noelle and I, and we were told, do not, you can't, it's not safe for the two of you to go there alone. And I hadn't thought of that, because we'd always gone and been there in a group for hours, and I spend hours there. I could spend a day there. That is my place. And so they said, no, two tourists some years back were found murdered there, and, you know, it's okay in a group, but you cannot go there by yourself, so it looked like we were not going to get to. But then Talia, you know, called the night before the period of the dire straits started and said, because of this, we're going to pray on Mount Gilboa. Can you go? And yes, so we went, and I wrote about that, how awesome that was. But the thing was that I said in there about Trish saying that we were going in the spirit of Caleb and praying that over us, and this being, that was one of the things that happened in this dire straits period, was the bad report. And Noelle reminded me of that. As we sat there, she said, Mom, we're supposed to be coming in the spirit of Caleb. And that was one of the things that took place in that dire, was that the bad report, and, you know, pray that we did not come back with a bad report. But something else that touched me so, as we shared personal prayer request, I shared a prayer request, a family matter. Not a lot of detail, just a little bit. And, you know, everybody on the other side of the world are going through the same stuff we're going through. And that night I was getting in bed and I got a phone call. And I didn't put it out on the email, but I can say it now for those of y'all who know Rena and Reuven, a wonderful, wonderful couple, Jewish couple. And I have never felt comfortable around them. They intimidate me a bit, especially Reuven. I probably haven't said 6 words to him in my life. I always felt intimidated around him. I don't know why. But Rena, you know, I felt better around her. But Rena called me as I was getting in bed that night. And she said, I have shared what you were sharing with Reuven, because we have gone through something almost identical to what you were sharing. And this is a critical matter. And Reuven would like to speak to you. He has something he wants to share with you. So I said, okay. So he got on the phone, and he just began to share. And as he talked, I had given just a teeny tiny little bit of detail. It was like I could have written this whole script, the identical situation. And he said, I've already been praying for this person, and I need to come and see you. The Father has given us a breakthrough, and I need to share it with you. When Can I see you? He said, I feel this is critical and urgent, and we can't waste time. This was on Wednesday, and we were leaving Friday to go to Yafo and not coming back. And I told him that. He said, how early will you be up in the morning? He was at the apartment at 7 o'clock that morning before he went to work. And I was just overwhelmed. This man that I haven't spoken six words to, that I always felt intimidated by, sat at that kitchen table and shared his heart with me. And he is just as real as the day is long. And his scenario was identical. I mean, just about. And the things he shared, the scriptures, and what the Father had shown them. And it was going along with this lighten your load. And he said, it'll eat you up. It is hell. And it is. It absolutely is. He said, but you can't carry this burden anymore. And it's critical. But the situation is critical. And this is what the Father's going to do. He stayed an hour. And we prayed together. And this was Brother Judah, who doesn't know me from Adam, that gave of their time before they went to work to travel from Nazareth to come and give this word to me. So I was very, very, just can't say enough. I have not gotten over that yet. And I'm telling you, something broke when he shared with me. When he left, I immediately went to my swing, those of you who know my swing, and I spent an hour, and I opened the word, and I was in the Psalms. Everything that I turned to was confirming just what he'd shared with me. And I've not picked that baggage back up again. Sitting on the roof, I really got to share this. The day before we left, the roof has now become my next favorite place, or maybe my favorite place. But I would sit on the roof at night, and I'd sit on the roof in the morning. It was the morning before we left, the day before we left. And I went out, and in the mornings, the morning sun is shining very brightly on one side. So you go around the corner of the roof, and it's still shaded. And so I took my chair and went to go around the corner of the roof. I do not like lizards. I do not like the tiny little green lizards that we have here at all. All it takes is one tiny little green lizard, and I'm out of here. I'm not going to fight him for that spot. I'm out of here. So I go around that corner, and I'm telling you, we'd already seen them all over the place. These are the hugest lizards I've ever seen in my life. They're like something you would see in the zoo, I'm telling you. And there was this ugly, huge lizard sitting right where I wanted to put my chair. And immediately, I mean, I felt myself bolt, and I was ready to head back in. And I thought, oh, be golly, if this lizard is going to take my spot on this roof. So with everything in me, I proceeded to walk toward this lizard, who reluctantly turned around and skirted up the wall, not too far from me, about from me to Joey. To me, that's not too far when it's a lizard. And he went up, and he turned around, and he cocked his head straight at me, and he assumed his position. So I put my chair down, and I sat down, and my back was going to have to be to him unless I turned and faced the wall. And I did not come out there to face the wall. I wanted to face Israel, the land. So I thought, can I sit here with that? He could jump on me at any point in time. And there was a battle going on inside of me. And the Father began to speak. This is what he told me. You came to Israel to claim your inheritance and to occupy your space. And this is why your presence in this land is so important. It's why it's so important for us to go and claim our inheritance and occupy our space. Because when we're not there, these great big ugly lizards are assuming our position and occupying our space. So, you sit here and assume your position. He's not coming back. And I sat there and I thought, well, I could move over a little bit and let him have his spot too, and we could share the roof. It's a pretty good sized roof. And he said, I didn't call you to share the roof with this lizard. I didn't call y'all to share the land with the giants that we say, with the ugly lizards that are in this land. You assume your position on this roof. So I sat in that chair with my back turned to that lizard. I am not going to lie. I did turn around and look at him a few times. He didn't move an ounce. I mean, he sat there on that wall, and that head, he may not have been looking at me at all, but it was turned to me and looked just like he was watching to see. It was like a stare-down thing. Are you going to leave or are you not? So in that, I'm saying that roof was mine, the whole roof. I wasn't called to share it with the lizard. And I think that we are to ask Abba to reveal the lizards, not only in Israel, but in our lives, especially the big and ugly ones. The big and ugly ones that scream out, I've been here a long time, and I'm big, and I'm ugly, and this is my roof. Let me tell you something, that is not so. But they're going to stay right there until we make a move and until we assume that position and let the Father take care of that lizard. That lizard did not ever move. When I left the roof, I was tempted to come back out later and peek and see, but I didn't, so I don't know. The last night that we were there, Ariel and Talia, we'd not gotten to see them too much because they had so much going on, so many prayer requests there, but they had called, and it was late. It's like 8 o'clock, and they said, have y'all eaten? And we had, and they said, can we take you out to dessert and coffee? And I knew they were tired and didn't feel like that, but they said, we really, really, really want to do this. So said yes. So I didn't even change my clothes. I thought we were going to a Afula. And I get there, and she's all dressed up, and they take us to the ski resort. That, yes, Israel has a ski resort, for those of you who don't know, that's phenomenal right there at Mount Gilboa. And we sat out. Of course, it's not real snow. Of course, we sat out on the balcony overlooking the ski resort. By this time, it's like 8:30, quarter to 9 at night. We were there like 10:30 and had dessert. Awesome sharing time. And I just mentioned to Talia, I said, did you know that Reuven came to see me? And she did not know. And so she, Ariel said, well, what is this about? And that's how I just told her. And she said, share with Ariel your situation. So I did, and Ariel shared something with me that I just want, some of you may want to jot this down, may not, I don't know, but he said, when you have strongholds in your life, he said, there are 10 psalms that are called the 10 melodies, and he said, these psalms are excellent for praying and reciting and speaking out loud for breaking strongholds in your life. And I jotted them down, and I did not get around to reading them until last night. And they are excellent psalms for break, that just go along with that. Not that there's any magic in reciting, I'm not saying that, but we're to pray the word. And these are very powerful prayers to pray, touching all kinds of different situations. But in case you're interested, they're Psalm 16, 32, 41, 42, 59, 77, 90, 105, 137, and 150. Okay? Psalm 16, 32, 41, 42, 59, 77, 90, 105, 137 and 150, and they're called the 10 melodies. Okay, so the next thing was we did not want to have to travel on Shabbat, and not thinking when I booked our tickets out of there, we've always left after Shabbat, always. But Shabbat was late, of course, being in July, and I hadn't thought of that, and there was no way if we left after Shabbat, we were going to get to the airport in time. And so Talia had a great idea. Noelle and I left that Friday morning and took a bus to Yaffa, which is Joppa, and it's on the Mediterranean. It's just outside of Tel Aviv, 20 minutes from the airport. So we went on Friday so we could spend Friday there and then have all Shabbat, have plenty of time after Shabbat to get there. That was a wonderful experience. Yaffa is where the cedars that were brought in for the Temple of Solomon were brought into that port. It's also where Simon the Tanner's house was, where Peter saw the vision of the sheet coming down. It's also where Peter prayed for Tabitha or Dorcas to raise her from the dead. And it's where Jonah was dispatched, where Jonah got on the ship from. A lot of history there, so it was absolutely a beautiful place. But the neatest thing was we stayed at Bet Emmanuel, which is a guest house run by Messianic Jews. They had a Shabbat service on that Friday evening that everybody was invited to. The place was packed. It was guests from all kinds of nations. Oh, my gosh, I got in the lobby and the hair stood up on my arms. You heard all these languages. The place was packed. And I thought, this is like Acts 2. This is the kingdom. This is the kingdom. It was so exciting. So the service, the pastor spoke in Hebrew, but you had headsets of whatever language you were. And there were all kinds of people wearing headsets with all this different language. So we put on the English. Well, the praise and worship was not, and the praise and worship was phenomenal. They had a praise and worship band, and it was phenomenal. But then the message, and I think this is a message for all. It was for me. It's for Gates to Zion, but it is for the entire body, I think. We keep hearing it, But he presented it in such, it was beautiful. He spoke about the body. And he spoke about the different parts of the body. And those that seem less significant, those that seem more important. But what he kept pointing out was, he said that sometimes the more significant parts, speaking of people that feel they're more significant, that pride comes in and they feel like they need to remove themselves for whatever reason. Sometimes the less significant, or that feel like they're in the less significant, because they feel they're less significant, they need to remove themselves. That the tiny little toe, just like we all know, is just as important as the eyes or the ears. The eyes and the ears are no more important than the little toe that helps balance us. Well, if the foot decides, you know, I don't have the same vision as the rest of this body. I don't understand what that hand does over there. That's not what I'm called to do. So I'm just going to go out here by myself and do my own thing. Or the eyes say, you know, I don't understand what those knees are doing down there. And I don't have the same calling they do. I don't understand this bending they do and all this. I'm just going to go over here by myself and do my own thing. And is that not what is happening in the body everywhere? We're not all called to do the same thing. We're all called to different things. We all have a mutual vision, but we're all called to act in different forms, in different parts of the body. But until every single part of that comes together, we don't have a healthy body. If we're over here running off because we've been offended, or everybody doesn't see it our way, or this person is not called, this is not my vision, I'm not called to this, I'm called to this. Well, where is the conflict in that? We're created different, with all different callings, with all different visions, and it is vital for us to come together as that body, as each single function that we have on this body, and work together so the body can be healthy and so it can accomplish. We can't accomplish anything. That's why the enemy tries so hard to keep the body parts separated, so that we can't accomplish anything. And until we decide that we don't have to run out here and do our own little thing, and we don't have to quit coming, and we don't have to do fellowship with this person because they think a little bit differently than we do, we're no threat to the enemy at all. He's got us right where he wants us. So I just really felt that he was saying, do not separate yourself. We all must function in our calling for the body to be whole. The next morning, there was a youth service there that I didn't know was going to be there. I'd gone out to have prayer time by myself, and I heard praise and worship again. Went in the lobby, and this youth band was cranking up. And this man who lives in Jerusalem, he's been there 10 years, but he's from the States. His name is Rich Ridings. He does, like Billy Graham, what am I trying to say? Well, crusades. but he does youth crusades all over Israel. Well, he's been to Indonesia, he's been all over the country, but he's targeting Israel, and they did one in Tel Aviv last August, and I cannot remember for the life of me. It started with an E. I wanted to tell you so you could look it up on YouTube. It was something 2010, this year it's whatever, 2011. But he gave stories of, he said, you're not going to hear this on the news. You're not going to see this reported. But he said, I am here to tell you, and he gave testimony after testimony of the young Jewish people and young Arabs that are coming together, finding Yeshua, first of all, and then loving one another. And he gave testimonies of terrorists who have come into this, young terrorists who have found Yeshua, embraced Brother Judah. Well, anyway, that happens again in August, and I was able to speak to them afterwards, and he was asking for our prayers for it. So just this coming up in Tel Aviv, but to know the Father is moving. The last thing I want to share is Ephraim and Ramona had wanted to come to see us, and it wasn't working out because they're moving. And so she called the day before we were leaving and said, we're going to come to Macarvia for Shabbat to see y'all. We feel we really need to get with y'all. And I said, well, we're not going to be there. We're going to Yafo. And she was ecstatic because that was like 15 minutes from them. So they said, we will come there. So they came that Shabbat afternoon about 3 and spent 2 hours. And just the most wonderful time to share with them. And they were sharing something that we've all seen happening. And the greatest cry of their heart right now is seeing so many of the Messianics converting to Judaism. And we've seen it happening. And they shared how they felt about that and the reasons they think this is happening. And I hope they get to share that with y'all, because I wouldn't even begin to try to share in the depth that they did. But one of the things they were saying is that we, as Ephraim, have not learned sanctification. That's one thing coming out that we weren't didn't learn in the churches. We're having to learn it here now because the churches, by and large, did not teach sanctification. And that's what's missing, which is why now so many Ephraimites are feeling that they have to convert to Judaism because they don't understand sanctification. And I'm very pleased to know that we've been taught that here and that it's an ongoing thing. And it, you know, made me feel so good to think, you know, that's been something I've heard here in this ministry. It was not something lacking. I want to leave with this is my report in a nutshell. And you might say, well, why didn't you just say that, sit down to start with? But this is what I asked the Father, in a nutshell, what is the report that I'm to give? And this is the report. It is a good land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey because Yahweh declared that. Don't matter what your eyes see and what it tells you, it is flowing with milk and honey because it's been declared that. It is our inheritance. We, in the strength of Yeshua, are called to go in and claim our inheritance as we link our arms with our brothers who have been holding on to it and the Torah and stand. Then Ephraim will become the arrow in the bow of Judah.
There's no doubt that Dixie had that Caleb spirit. I saw that Caleb spirit on the roof. No, this is my land. I'm taking it. You're not running me off of it. That's that Caleb spirit. Thank you, Dixie, for what you, Noel, and Jolie did, how they marched through the land, how they walked through the land, how they claimed the land. In the physical means so much in the spiritual. It absolutely does. It is so important. We say it over and over again, but it is so important. And, you know, talking about those bondages, the strongholds in a person, there's strongholds in that land. You know, Dixie was talking about the person. This is the land, too. This is Israel also. We're land. We're Israel. We're that land, and there's strongholds. The strongholds got to be pulled down. There's baggage that got to be gotten away from, taken off, left back, dealt with, you know, before we go into the land, before we go not only physically into the land, but spirit come into that kingdom.
There was just one other thing that he said so importantly. I don't want to forget this. Every, you know, we made that mistake of packing that book bag so full. So every day as we start out on our journey, we had to choose what to put in that book, in that backpack, every day. And he showed me that every day we choose what to put in our backpacks, every single day. And I'm going to tell you what, when I came home, I have not been the same since I came home. I've never been so free in my entire life. Was it because I came home and found out that everything was? No, in fact, I came home to find out a few other things that broke my heart. But even though they broke my heart, I chose not to put it in that backpack. And he showed me every day you get up and you choose what you're going to put in that backpack. So that is something we need to think about every day. What baggage are we going to carry this day? What baggage are we going to leave back out again?
Jan, yeah. Jan has a baggage story also.
baggage. Well, it's just such a confirmation because 2 weeks ago, when Lenny and Varda were here, we end up sharing with a couple. And they were getting ready to go to the land. And in sharing with them and listening to some things they had to say, we shared and imparted about it was very important that they get rid of any unnecessary baggage before they go in the land. And we shared with them, which we've shared with all of you, whatever you have that you have not dealt with, that you're carrying, it's going to cost you when you get there. So that night when I was laying in bed, the Father began to take me through a scenario. So this is a confirmation because last year, if you remember, we came back and it was about distractions. And I believe there's something powerful because what you're sharing is exactly, and we had not talked about this, but he showed me about how we go to the airport. And let me tell you, those of you who've been to the airport, you're allowed 50 pounds and 2 suitcases. And if you don't think that we're in and out of those suitcases time and time and time and time again to get that right weight oh, I don't really need to take this. Well, this is going to really, do I really need to have this? No, you don't really need to have this. Well, this would be a lot more important to have this here. You go in and out of those suitcases. When you get to the airport, if you're an ounce over your 50 pounds, it's going to cost you dearly. You hear me? It's going to cost you dearly. You're going to pay for anything over what you're allowed to have. And the Father began to show me about our lives, that we have got baggage, and it's time we get rid of it. We're not allowed to have that weight. We have exceeded what we're supposed to have. And if we don't get rid of it, it's going to cost us. So I just really began to see exactly what you're saying. This is something Father's trying to show us, for us to examine our lives. We got to get rid of some things now. And when you did, oh, the load was lightened. The joy of the trip, what you got to enjoy rather than being so weighted down with unnecessary things. So he's trying to show us. So y'all take to heart what she shared. Father's saying something. Let's examine this baggage we've got. Let's get rid of some things we're not supposed to have. Because if we don't, it's going to cost us.
I think singing those songs would definitely get rid of some of that baggage, would it not? Absolutely. Thank you, Dixie, Noel, Joely, again, for what y'all have done in the physical, and it's meant so much in the spiritual. No question about it.